This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Book critic Maureen Carrigan has drawn up her best books list for 2002, plus a couple of last-minute mentions of very good books that she's just caught up with.
This was the year of interesting to superb first novels. Out of that group of debutantes, the one that's my pick for the best novel of 2002 was the one I most didn't want to read, The Lovely Bones by Alice Sebold. This is a story narrated from heaven by an adolescent girl named Susie Salmon, who's been raped and murdered by a serial killer, an act we readers witness in the opening of the novel. The torture and death of a child probably tops the list of subjects I don't want to know about, but because I was required to keep reading, I ended up having a singular, disturbing, and even enlightening literary experience. The predictable backlash has begun against The Lovely Bones. Some critics are now accusing the book of being sentimental. Ignore them. I can still hear Susie's remarkable voice, questioning, wry, hollow, and so powerful it sometimes overwhelms all the reassuring noises of everyday life. Another terrific debut novel this year was The Dive from Clawson's Pier by Ann Packer. Packer has a gift for deceptively unadorned language that captures the complexities of romantic love and its burdens. Her heroine, a young Midwesterner named Carrie Bell, is about to break her engagement when her fiancé breaks his neck and becomes a quadriplegic. Sounds melodramatic, I know. But the psychological subtlety of Packer's language, the way she hints at rather than overstates Carrie's decisions, really distinguishes this novel. Atonement by Ian McEwan is the best novel of the year by a literary old master. It's a brilliant, nuanced, and technically sly tale that spans the 1930s to the present and leaves readers with the unsettling conviction that only the strong and unscrupulous survive. The nonfiction standouts this year are an appealingly motley bunch. Bad Blood by the late British literary critic Lorna Sage is a vivid, tragicomic memoir by a daughter of the 1950s who got knocked up but not knocked down. In The Devil's Snare by renowned women's historian Mary Beth Norton suggests a new and very convincing solution to the enduring mystery of the Salem witch hunts. Another scholar, Mark Edmondson, sidesteps mawkishness in his shrewd, class-conscious memoir, Teacher, about an eccentric high school teacher who transformed Edmondson from a football thug to an avid reader, and also introduced him to the hard reality that thinking hurts. The Good Women of China, by Chinese radio journalist Xin Ran, recounts the difficult lives of contemporary female factory workers, entrepreneurs, peasants, and intellectuals in that country. Xin Ran says the question that obsessed her all the while she was doing her radio show in China during the 1990s was, just what is a woman's life worth in China? You get the feeling throughout this book that she's still reeling from the answer. A couple of books I've just caught up with deserve a mention before the year is out. Don't Tell Mama is the title of the Penguin book of Italian-American writing, edited by feminist literary scholar Regina Barreca. As that cheeky title suggests, this is a boisterous and frequently moving collection of autobiographical essays, poems, and fiction excerpts designed to dispel the prejudice that, apart from Don DeLillo, Gay Talese, and Mario Puzo, Italian Americans make better cooks, gangsters, and filmmakers than they do writers. And I've just read the big buzz book of early fall, I Don't Know How She Does It, by Allison Pearson. This is the comic novel about a working mother of two named Kate Reddy, who manages hedge funds in London by day and cleans up spilt apple juice and vomit at home by night. The so-called fairy tale ending, where Kate quits her high-powered job, makes me a bit uneasy. But I laughed helplessly out loud throughout most of this novel, starting with the very first page that finds Kate, late at night in her kitchen, busily distressing a store-bought mince pie for a party at her daughter's preschool so that the stay-at-home moms, or Muffia as she calls them, won't sneer at her. I don't know how she does it, is hip to the complications of class and generational differences, and above all, to the catch-22 situations of women caught in an unfinished feminist revolution. And it's filled with such droll one-liners, like when Kate describes her unshaven husband as looking like Ted Hughes left in the tumble dryer. As of the end of 2002, the Brits are still tops when it comes to literary wit. But there's always hope for the colonies in 2003.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. Her complete list can be found on our website, freshair.com. This is Fresh Air.